Welcome to the Costume Plot.
I'm JoJo Siu.
And I'm Sarah Tim. We're professional designers with a passion for costume design and the performing arts. Our podcast does contain spoilers. Accompanying slideshows for each movie are linked in the episode description.
We hope you'll join us every other week as we delve into the wonderful world of costume design in the Costume Plot.
Welcome back to the Costume Plot. Happy February. Oh my goodness. Yes,
I can't believe it's February already. A whole month of this year has gone by.
I know. And I'm broadcasting from my bed today. Comfy zone.
Yes. And I have a not anchored, you know, microphone. So that's
we're so new professional. For
both of us. We're doing great. We did have a cool interview that's set up for this month, so something to look forward to at least.
That'll be the second episode of the month. Yeah, so, it was a really fun one.
Yes.
Get excited, listeners. No, it's going to be awesome.
Yet, but
yeah.
Please look forward to that. We're really excited.
Yeah.
Anyways, I will get us back to our theme of this month.
What's the theme?
We specifically had a theme, but I was really interested in this new show, The Artful Dodger. And so we kind of got back into some period stuff for this episode. So we are going through another TV show episode, but we are covering some period. So I will be starting and then Sarah will be going second. But like I said, I covered The Artful Dodger, which actually just recently came out. And it is so new that there is literally nothing on this show just yet because I think it just premiered in the UK. I think they filmed in Australia, I want to say, or at least they have a lot of Australian actors listed on this.
That's cool.
On the credits, which is really cool. But it is... apparently on Hulu. I mean, it is on Hulu, but it is apparently on Disney Plus as well. I believe that is only in the UK at the moment because I have not seen it in the US, but quote me if I'm wrong.
So funny.
Don't quote me if I'm wrong.
They're
sorry.
Like, you have to find it yourself. Good luck.
Yes, exactly. So this, again, it premiered in November of 2023 was when I was able to find on IMDb. The director, of course, because this is a TV show, is multiple directors. Jeffrey Walker is one of them. He did the most episodes and he is Australian. So he actually did, interestingly enough, The Clearing. He directed a few episodes of Modern Family, which is probably the most recognizable for us in the U.S. He also directed some episodes of Lambs of God, Riot, Dance Academy, the movie.
Okay.
but he's apparently gotten 11 wins and 17 nominations.
Okay.
So pretty awesome. And then I will say I had a really hard time trying to find any kind of legitimate credits for the costume designer for this show. Which Sarah and I have kind of briefly touched on this, like what an interesting thing to not have a costume designer credited on a fairly big recognized TV platform, such as Hulu and Disney. Eventually I did find on her manager's website, Xanth Hubel, I think is how you say her name. And I believe she is a predominantly Australian costume designer. Mm-hmm. The only reason I'm pretty sure she's a costume designer is because there was backstage Instagram videos of her actually in the trailer with these actors.
It's so funny how you had to do that like detective work in order to figure it out when it should just be listed.
So lots of fun discoveries.
Nancy Drew on the Google.
Lot of crazy digging. but she was nominated for 5 Australian Production Designer Guild Awards, which I thought was kind of cool. Some of her other show credits are 10 Pound Palms. Again, have not heard a lot of these, but Total Control, Amazing Grace, Wakefield, and she also did Lambs of God, which apparently is actually a TV miniseries. There's a lot of TV miniseries under her credit belt. But yes, so some weird information that I had to dig up. But apparently her name is not on any of the IMDb credits for either the show or her credit page.
So wild.
So
I wonder what that's all about.
I have lots of questions about that. But also, why aren't we crediting costume designers?
What's the story there? Like, anyways. There's got to be some sort of story.
Exactly.
Some sort of weird contract thing or something crazy.
So I will say my pictures are also very limited because there are not a ton of photos of the costumes in this show, mm-hmm. which is really a shame because I only covered the first episode, but there's at least four dresses on our lead actress, and I could only find pictures of two of them.
Oh, boy.
So sorry, fans. we only get to see two of the dresses that I wanted to show you. But I will read a quick synopsis, which will probably be a slightly better summary than what I could make up. This is just from, I think, the Wikipedia page, but it's an irreverent follow-up to Dickens' Oliver Twist, which I actually had no idea going in watching the show. But it explores the adult double life of Charles Dickens' famous Prince of Thieves, Jack Dawkins. It is set in 1850s Australia, which is probably cool. Why they shot a lot of their initial scenes there. Mm-hmm. But it's in the lively colony of Port Victory. We meet Jack Dawkins, who's also known as Dodger, hence the name Artful Dodger for the show, who's transferred his fast fingers as a pickpocket to the nimble, skilled fingers of a surgeon.
Uh-oh.
Dodger's past returns to haunt him with the arrival of Fagin, who lures him back into the world of crime. And then, of course, a greater threat to Dodger's heart, because you always need a romance story in every Disney show, is Lady Belle Fox, the governor's daughter, who's also determined to become the colony's first female surgeon. So that's a really cool perspective.
That is cool.
From heists to life and death surgeries, from soirees to street violence, this is the tale of reinvention, betrayal, redemption, and love with a twist. So yes,
I've definitely heard of Dodger the character. I will say I'm not like a Dickens person. I never read Oliver, but I got assigned a few Dickens books in high school and hated every second of it. Mm-hmm. So I'm really not familiar with.
They can be really long and drawn out. For
so
sure.
Wordy.
I don't know that I'm like a super Charles Dickens fan. I've appreciated a lot of the work that's come out from his books.
Sure.
But I don't know that I was necessarily an avid Dickens reader either.
The only one I got through was Christmas Carol, and that's because that one's pretty short and I was envisioning the Muppets the whole time. So
yes. The Muppets, best version of that movie.
It is, and it's really faithful too. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Yes. I digress. We digress. So I will get us started. Let me open up to my Google Chrome. And I try to do this kind of in order, partially because, again, I really was very limited in being able to find photos.
Yeah.
So I ended up kind of trying to cover all the characters just so we can kind of get a sense of who these characters are. And I think there's a lot of the one thing I will say about this show, if you haven't seen the show, totally fine. It kind of dives you right in the first episode, which is great. But if you do keep watching the show, the nice thing I really love about this is that they recycle a lot of the clothes.
Oh, cool.
Which really is, you know, what people do, but like on TV shows, I feel like that's often not done a lot.
Yeah.
Unless it's like, you know, The Walking Dead, where they're literally in those clothes for a long period of time.
Yeah.
But I love that, like, you see the family re-wearing a lot of the same dresses that they would have owned in their closet. Like, they don't just get a new closet. Even the governor's daughter, like, they have two. And both of them are obviously very well off. The family is very well off. But you see them wearing kind of the same clothes over and over again throughout the episodes. So it really does kind of give you a much more realistic look into the life of people in that time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know the 1850s as well, this is kind of the crinoline era. It's not quite to the same massive size as like Gone with the Wind,
uh-huh.
but it is that era of like the large round cage skirts, the petticoats, you know, all of the layers, and also kind of, they do take some liberties with like the dropped shoulder. I think they include some of that in the dresses,
yeah.
but you will see a lot of the kind of higher neck sort of buttoned up the front blouses. So we'll talk a little bit about some of that. But for the men, it's a lot of like, they're not quite fedoras yet. and you can definitely see the disparity between sort of the wealthy class and the laboring class as well, because there's also a lot of prisoners and criminals that are part of the underground, obviously, because, you know, Dodger is sort of that in-between of, like, he's made something of himself as a surgeon, but he's still part of that underground crime world because that's what he's known for his entire life.
Right.
So the first picture I have is, of course, all my stuff is blocking my titles. Darius Crackworth, who is this gentleman right here, and his henchman. So he's kind of like this seedy, like, he's got it in with sort of the police force or the law, I should say, that's kind of represented in the show. I just wanted to pull this because, again, it's just a really lovely combination of patterns and very, like, period accurate, I would say. There's a little bit of 1820s left over here, which is kind of that Pride and Prejudice era. So it's that high collar that sort of sits up right at the neck. Yeah. So it's almost set back a little bit, which we've talked about this in the past, but because he is sort of an older character, he would have worn stuff that might not necessarily be super up to date in terms of fashion.
Right.
And then, of course, his henchman is dressed very kind of, I feel like we think of the stereotypical, like, Gold Rush sort of look, where yeah. it's that, like, rolled up sleeve.
That's definitely the vibe.
And the vests. Yeah. I think that's a very common thing. Especially for this time, because that's what they would have done in this colony as well. And it gives you kind of a good smattering of other laborers and kind of townspeople in the background as well.
Nice.
Cool. Nothing to say about that. Nothing else to say about that, I should say. I pulled this because this actually does show, again, a really great crowd scene. Of, like, kind of what was typical in the time period. You do have a lot of gentlemen, you know, whether you're poor or rich, they would definitely have these kinds of hats. So, mm-hmm. like, even if you didn't necessarily have the nicest or the newest hat, it would have potentially been something passed down or something you would have saved from a previous era.
Yeah.
And literally all men kind of had all of these layers. It was very, very standard to have the pants, the vest, the shirt, the cravat, as well as the, when I say cravat, I should explain it is the neckwear of that time, but mm-hmm. also the suit coats that they would have worn from that time period as well. And then, of course, Jack Dawkins, for their surgeries, they would often have these kind of bets, and this was also a way for him to kind of get any kind of money, because surgeons at this time, which is so mind-boggling to me, but they apparently never got paid. They were kind of just paid in, you know, room and board, essentially.
Oh my gosh.
For studying under someone who is a little higher. And their professor, of course, is sort of this drunkard and not a very good surgeon. So Jack Dawkins, of course, ends up proving himself as the very capable and almost too capable. He's sort of in this workplace with other kind of degenerates who don't really know what they're doing. And so, but because he doesn't have the pedigree, he's often looked down upon. So you can kind of see some of that represented in how he dresses. This is actually what he typically wears whenever we see him as the doctor. And of course, mm-hmm. his surgeon's apron. And then moving on to this coat, because I Ooh, love it so much.
That's nice.
It's just got such a beautiful texture.
Yeah.
And again, this is what we always see Jack in. Like, no matter where he's at, this is his doctor's uniform. So rather right. than having sort of the white lab coat that we associate with doctors today, this is what he always wears, you know, whenever we see him traveling as a doctor. And even the clothing underneath it, not only does it become the uniform that we recognize him in, which I think the costume designer is very aware of that, but it's also kind of showing us, like, that he doesn't have a lot of money to own, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 shirts, mm-hmm. whereas the other surgeon has a little bit more wealth, and he, you know, he has a little bit more selection and variety in his clothing. Dawkins really does not.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of him, of course, he runs into Fagin. But I love this, just sort of the breakdown of how they portrayed him as the prisoner. Clearly, he's been in this outfit for forever. One thing that I did have an issue with for this, and it wasn't necessarily costume, maybe more of like a directing acting choice, was that they kept mm-hmm. saying that he, like, really stunk. But then everywhere he went, like, no one seemed bothered that he was, like, dressed like this and also really, really smelly. And I was like, you're walking past all these people dressed in these really nice, like, three-piece, even if they're not the wealthiest of the wealthiest, like, clearly they're not reacting to you like you're actually odious. Yeah. But I think costume-wise, he definitely gets across that feeling of, like, I've been living in these clothes for a really long time. The other thing that kind of bothered me was that they threw a jacket on him, and then that's pretty much what he wears for the rest of the show. And I'm like, okay, I get that this is a time where, like, we don't have running water and, like, a full shower, but he would have at least bathed himself, I would think. Like...
Yeah.
And then later episodes, he does eventually get a slight costume update. Like when he goes to a ball, he has a nicer cravat and a nicer vest. But it never really explains where that came from and like what happened to these clothes. So anyways, just lots of questions. Again, the costume designer wasn't even credited. So I have a lot of questions about what this process was like.
Definitely.
Okay, moving on. This is just another shot. Not too much has changed, obviously, with Jack Dawkins, but you can see some of the floppiness of the hat, especially in comparison with Jack Dawkins' presented kind of wealth, as opposed to Fagin's very kind of misshapen, sort of not quite fitting outfit. I do love this jacket, that they end up putting on him over his really dirty clothes, but it's got this almost like a puff sleeve.
Yeah, it has a lot of gathers up there.
It is, which I found so interesting because it doesn't really look like a man's jacket. It looks almost slightly feminine. Because, like, even if you look at the comparison of the puff of his sleeve versus Jack's, there's obviously a much more masculine shape to his, and Fagin kind of just becomes sort of a joke, which is a little bit his character. But, again, I have lots of questions. I wasn't able to find
much.
Yeah,
maybe it's like a... Jack's is like more structured and his is more like soft and kind of mushy in a way where he's, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. It's kind of weird because like puff sleeves on men's stuff is definitely a thing in some eras, right. But I don't think it was a thing
not
in crinoline
era. Not for this era. It was definitely getting a much more masculine because this was after Beau Brummel, too, which is really kind of he sort of invented the modern day, you know, like tailcoat suit. So they would have, like, this would have been really out of style. So unless they were trying to really get something from, like, way back, that the idea that it was, like, something that got thrown in a closet and was, like, an antique.
That's, maybe he got it out of the trash or something,
yeah,
you know?
Like. Exactly. So, yeah, lots of interesting questions. Again, I'm sure there's no some answers. Sort of backstory to this jacket, but I love that
all questions,
it's got almost,
no
like,
answers.
A lacy texture, too. In comparison to the very kind of geometric color and pattern for Jack.
Yeah.
Okay, so on to the Odd Ladies. Again, I really couldn't find very many photos of this dress, which I was really sad about. But she does wear this quite often during the show. And it is a really lovely, like, complementary colors of the purple and the yellow, or kind of almost off-green yellow. But yes, one thing I love about Lady Belle is that the designer was really great about putting her in these kind of almost masculine jackets, like almost like a jerkin with like an extended skirt over top of the crinoline dress or crinoline skirt that she has on, versus her sister who is in a lot more frills, mostly like light pinks and baby blues. And a lot of, like, extra ruffles and bows. So she's definitely much more tailored, and I think that was a really great way to separate their character because she is sort of the studious, sort of only woman in a man's world that's trying to pursue a man's career. And then I couldn't find a color photo of this, but you can kind of see a little more of the dress. And the skirt.
Yeah, and the underskirts. Yeah.
And again, what's much more geometric patterns for Lady Belle. And then her sister over here on the side, Fanny, has all the kind of florals, sort of wider lantern sleeves. Everything is much more belled out and lots of bows and frills. So you can tell which sister is sort of the pretty princess versus sort of the more masculine career oriented. And then just again, I did get this upper body shot of Fanny.
That's cute.
In that same dress. But I do love the colors on her. Like, I think it really just kind of helps to pop her hair out too. Again, lots of bows, lots of baby blues, lots of pinks. Of course, the one image that I couldn't find of them was like the perfect image of Lady Bell in a black pinstripe dress and Fanny in like a, sort of the equivalent, but in pink with lots of extra ruffles. But it's when they first kind of get introduced to the first suitor. So, yes, sadly, fans, we will not have pictures of that. All right. Rainsford is sort of the competing surgeon that's against Jack Dawkins. He's always in some sort of browns and kind of like chocolates, which I think sort of makes him kind of the boring everyman a little bit, which I think actually is very successful. But you can tell the style and like quality of his suits is definitely much more updated compared to Dawkins. And then the professor, I do feel like there's this stereotype that we give to professors of always wearing this like really kooky pattern. And I think they did do that a little more subtly here, obviously with the vest, but they definitely gave him that sort of stereotypical professor, like crazy professor look. And that's our Professor Alistair.
Yeah. Like eccentric, kind of an
eccentric. Yes.
I can't say the word eccentric. Eccentric, it's a lot of kind of vibe,
and he's always drunk, so the fact that he's constantly operating on these people while drunk with unsteady hands is really scary. There is for those of you who are not really into blood and gore, trigger warning, there is a lot of there's definitely some bloody scenes where you're just like, oh, he should not be in that room.
Yes.
Just kind of, again, showing the incompetence that Jack Dawkins is surrounded by. Yeah. Again, I couldn't find any other photos of Susie Porter as our Lady Jane. She is Lady Bella's mother. And I love how strong they made all the women in this show. Maybe minus Fanny, because she's sort of the pretty princess. You do need one of those in every show. But the mother is also kind of the one that clearly runs the house, even though her husband's the governor. But I love that they've put her in this, like, gorgeous, high pleated collar. And even, again, she's always in some sort of black mixed with this navy blue. So it does go to show, you know, not only the kind of royal wealth that she has. She also has a lot of like royal blues that she wears as well. So a lot of her dresses are kind of in that vibrant blue color. But it just kind of goes to show, you know, how much she has to sort of become this figurehead in the family. And she and Lady Bell get along very well, because I think both of them understand the man's world and having to be able to manipulate and control it. But I think this this costume was very successful in that way. So good on you, Xanth. So Captain Gaines, again, I kind of threw this picture in not because I necessarily loved the costume, but because I think his character is such a huge contrast to everyone else. He is obviously our very, very conservative lawman. He kind of takes things to an extreme a little bit. And he's also sort of the extreme religious kind of figurehead. So he sort of takes everything a little too seriously, which I think, again, is very common when we designers put a character, especially period. There's a lot of – it's almost that I'm trying to remember what the title of the actual – it's not – it's like Puritans. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. It's that idea of
Puritanical.
Yeah, it's very puritanical, because it's the black, I think it's the black frock coat.
Yeah.
I mean, normally we think of kind of like the, I don't want to say like the Thanksgiving, like colonial hats.
The pilgrim outfits, but it is like sort
of that. It kind of it's very reminiscent of that. Maybe particularly
Puritanical people didn't. Yeah, they didn't wear a lot of color, because it was all very conservative. They thought like that being flashy was, you know, like against their beliefs or whatever.
And I love that we kept him in sort of the traditional black on black on black. He's got the black pinstripe at the bottom. And then even just the very small hint of the white and gray. I think a lot of the scenes it's not even necessarily white and gray underneath. Sometimes he's also wearing like black underneath. So again, it just goes to show a lot of his character. Even like the leather gloves, granted this is a fixed photo, but not necessarily from the show.
Yeah.
But it sort of gives off that idea that he's a very hard man, and he sticks to what he truly believes is correct. But it means that it makes him a very harsh, what's the right word? Law holder, law enforcer.
Yeah.
But yes. So he's definitely kind of the scary character. Like it's kind of to the point where you're a little bit like you've got a little psycho killer in you. So ooh. He definitely is sort of the villain of the yikes. Show.
Right.
Moving on. Okay. So, of course, beautiful, beautiful dress. I am glad that they got pictures of this. She wears this pretty often, actually, throughout the season. So I'm glad that they bring it back. But she wears this, of course, when she kind of sort of convinces Jack Dawkins to do these surgeries that are very, in her mind, theoretical, because she's only ever studied books about all of this and she wants to be a surgeon, but she's never had the practical experience. And that's kind of where her relationship with Jack starts forming. But I love this kind of contrast of color. Like, clearly we've put her in these colors to stand her out from everyone else in the town. But also just to showcase her wealth. Like, I think oftentimes having bland colors to kind of showcase background and also, sadly, laborers gives us a contrast to people that have a lot of color, because it means they can afford you know, the dyes or the extra threads or the different types of fabric that go into making something this vibrant. So again, you know, you see this same coat that's on Fagin, which I love the long trench coat look. But again, it's that puff sleeve, because it looks like it actually does fit pretty well everywhere else. Again, just lots of questions about that jacket. So I don't have too much to say about this dress. It's just really beautiful. And it's like
gorgeous.
Just look at the lineup of that chevroning plaid. It's just love that
pattern. Matching.
Yes. And then the little black bows that kind of close it up and meet right on top and bottom plaid. Of this chevron plaid.
Gorgeous.
It's great. Looks beautiful. No notes. And then I got these pictures at the very end. Lady Bell ends up bringing Jack Dawkins to the governor's ball, which is crazy to me that they fit all of that into one episode. But the nice thing is at the governor's ball, you get to see all these beautiful dresses, which is really where I had a lot of fun looking at the crinoline era. But you can see here, Sister Fanny is, again, back in her traditional pink. Lots more frills. Even though it is stripes, it's got glitter on it. Or some metallic embroidery here. But even, like, the ruffles and the lace at the collar. She's also a lot more exposed, which also, I think, says a lot about their very different views of romance. Lady Bell obviously falls in love, but it's not her first thought.
Yeah, it's not her priority.
Whereas Fanny is really trying to find a suitor every episode. Yeah. So you can definitely tell in the way they dress.
I'm mad that they're eating popsicles in costume in that picture.
Oh, me too.
I would yell at them if I was their costumer.
For all costume designers out there that are just having a conniption about this. I pulled this. It's not a super clear image, unfortunately, so I apologize, fans. But this was a great example of just all the different other dresses that were part of this ball. So, of course, we love a good crowd scene to kind of just quickly showcase what the other options are. And then I found this really cool... See if this is it. Yes, ooh. I found this really cool behind the scenes staged photo.
Nice.
From someone on one of the Instagrams. So again, I did a lot of deep diving.
Yeah, I appreciate stuff like that. I appreciate when the actors post things like this, because it's like you can see it in the daylight. It's a full body shot. Like, so nice.
Yeah, and like all the detail in this. you know, you see our captain here. He's back in his traditional kind of, it's like a nicer, almost there's a sheen to his jacket, which he doesn't always have, obviously. But, you know, for the ball, he would have had a nicer outfit for that. And he's kind of, what's the right word? He's sort of like paid for by the governor. He's sort of like the governor's right-hand man. So he has a lot more power than he really should have to enforce all these laws, but he gets a lot of his money from the governor. Governor's wife, again, in this beautiful black. I love that you can tell this is velvet because I don't know that I tracked that when I was first watching it because I don't think I ever saw this in its entirety during that scene. And then, of course, Bella, or Lady Belle, in her, which I don't think I saw this in the first image, but I love that there's this contrasting stripe.
Yeah, I noticed that, but I thought it was the same fabric, just like on the bias, but it's not. It has obviously way more black in it. That's so cool.
Yep. And almost like different it's colors. Like complementary colors, but not exact colors.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Love that. And then, Tartan. You know, we see Fanny here. This is our Darius. This is where I feel like he got sort of the updated wardrobe. You know, he clearly got like a nicer vest for this occasion. Again, I don't know where it came from, but somehow he got that. This dress was one of the ones that I wasn't a huge fan of. So this is actually Mrs. Gaines. So Peggy Gaines is Captain Gaines's wife.
Okay.
So obviously she is kind of kept under lock and key by him. And it's this very sort of abusive relationship where she's not allowed to say much because he's sort of the man of the house. But because of that, she is having an affair with his best friend, Darius. Oh,
okay.
But every time you see her, she's in these very conservative, lots of blacks, lots of dark browns. Clearly, it's sort of like her dress has been controlled.
Yeah.
And even the way that she's covered here too, which, again, I didn't like the dress just because I didn't think it was pretty, but it goes with the character that is in this show. So, so there's that. And then of course our governor right here with the blue water bottle.
Hydrating.
And he's also often in blacks. We don't really see him in much more than that because that's just the sort of traditional conservative look that him and his wife dress in. So yes, I think that was my last one. Yep, okay. That was my last one.
Wow. That show looks very interesting.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Again, if you haven't seen it, makes sense because it is, again, very, very new. but it's got a lot of wit and charm to the writing, which I really like.
Yeah.
And they don't. Like, there's obviously Disney things about this show that you can tell are very Disney, but there's also a lot of smart writing that I think helps draw the characters in a little bit. There's obviously plot holes in this show, but you know, sometimes that happens.
Yeah. Well, great job. But that's thanks, a Sarah. Fun one. That's fun.
I know. Well, yeah, please go watch the show again. Trigger warning, there is some gore in there, but there's also some really lovely, fun scenes. And I can't remember the name of the main actor at the moment. He is also in Queen's Gambit, but he's so super talented. And like the banter back and forth between him and Lady Belle is, I think, one of my favorites in this show, actually.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, Sarah, what are you covering today?
So, that was great. Great job. My selection when JoJo said, "Oh, I think I'm going to do this period TV show," I was like, "Oh, awesome!" Because I have a period TV show that I love, and it's called "Our Flag Means Death," and I'm very excited to talk about it because it's so good. And fans of the show might be kind of excited to see it being covered or talked about because it did just get announced that it was canceled, which is really sad.
So sad.
Because it has like a really loyal fan base and like very passionate and amazing fans. So, I hope I do it justice. I'm sorry in advance if I don't. My research was kind of Fast and Furious done in like 30 minutes while I was shoving dumplings into my face.
Hey, hunger is real.
tonight. So
you gotta eat.
Yeah. So sorry if it's a little, I don't know, not super in depth, but I'm just going to do my best. And yay, it is what it is. Okay. Let me blow up my notes. Okay. So I'm going to cover from season one, I'm covering kind of like episodes 3 and 4, because it was kind of like, I wanted to cover the first episode, but that we don't meet Blackbeard until like episode 4. So I wanted to make sure that I got Blackbeard in there, because he's important and his costume is awesome. So that's why I picked 3 and 4 from season one. And season one was in 2022. The second season just came out recently, and I actually have not watched the second season yet. So I'm really excited to do so. It's going to be kind of bittersweet knowing that it's the last one, but hopefully that means I'll just enjoy it more. And this episode was directed by Nacho Vigalondo, and he actually, I think he directed both of the episodes I'm talking about. He directed 3 episodes of this show in total, and he is also a writer. Nothing that he's done is really anything I recognize, but he did have a lot of credits. And like, for example, he wrote and directed, I think it's a TV show called Stories to Stay Awake. And he has been nominated for an Oscar in the short film category for his short film 735 de la Mañana. And he was also, I believe he cameoed in this episode as like another ship captain. I don't have pictures of him, but I think that was, it said that he was credited and I was like, oh, I think that's him. So that's kind of fun. And then the costumes were designed by Christine Wada. She did the whole first season of this show. And then the second season is designed by someone named, I think her name was Gypsy Taylor. I'll edit that out if I'm wrong. I think that's what her name is. Okay. So it's interesting how there's a completely different designer for the second season. But Christine Wada has also done Bridesmaids, which is one of my all-time favorite movies. Love that movie.
So good.
And she also just did the Loki TV show for Disney Plus. Nice. The show Mascots and the movie Zombieland 2. And she also, before she started getting big credits as a costume designer, she was like a set costumer and an Adria Dyer as well. And she was an Adria Dyer on Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which is a really good movie that I would love to cover in the future. Yeah. She's been nominated for 3 CDGs and she has been nominated for 1 Emmy as well. So she's out here doing her thing. And I got a lot of, thankfully, Frock Flix. We consult Frock Flix kind of a lot because they kind of do the research for us. So I,
thanks, Frock Flix.
Thanks. Thank you.
Shout out.
I got a lot of information from them. As well as I found out from them that, one of the people who worked as, I think, a customer or was it a fabric buyer? I don't know. Her name is Hannah Green, and she has an Instagram where she has kind of gone into depth about certain costumes from this season. So I got some information from there because there was no interviews that I could find with Christine Wada except for a podcast episode that I did not have time to listen to. So I'm just going off of what I could find. All right. So the plot of this show is the year is 1717. And a man named Steed Bonnet has had sort of like a midlife crisis and abandoned his family and his life as a member of like the gentry, like rich, comfortable in the Bahamas, I think. Or is it Barbados? God, I don't know. Somewhere in, you know,
one of those islands,
the Caribbean. And he's abandoned his life because he wants to become a pirate. And so he decides that he's going to be the gentleman pirate. He's going to be, you know, well-dressed and cool, and he's going to be different from all the other pirates. And so the show is basically about him and his crew trying to, you know, become successful pirates. And then they cross paths with Edward Teach, aka Blackbeard. And of course, these are real pirates who existed. Steve Bonnet and Blackbeard are both real pirates, but this show is a very, very fictionalized version of their lives. And I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say that the show is ultimately like a romantic comedy about them falling in love. And it's so good. I can't even describe how good it is. Obviously, I haven't even seen the second season, but
yeah,
It's so good. Okay, so then in these episodes that I've picked, Steed visits the Republic of Pirates, which is kind of like a trading post, like meeting area for pirates, mm-hmm. sort of like Tortuga is in Pirates of the Caribbean, where they meet there and, you know, there's bars and they can sell their bodies and all sorts of stuff. And he goes there to sell off a hostage that he has into slavery. I don't know if he successfully does that. I don't think he does. But then he meets, you know, some people in the Republic of Pirates. And then at the end of that episode is when Blackbeard crosses paths with him. And then episode 4 is him and Blackbeard kind of getting to know each other a little bit. So that's kind of why I picked these episodes, because it's kind of, we go to kind of fun places and we mm-hmm. meet fun people. And so regarding like doing research and basing it on real characters, David Jenkins, who is the creator of the show, he said, once you have a Polynesian Jewish man playing Blackbeard, you're already not in reality. So Taika Waititi is a producer and he also plays Blackbeard.
Oh my gosh.
So they have been very upfront about being like, this is not actually, like, it's inspired by these real men, but it's not based on their lives. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not a real account of what their lives were like. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I should get into some costumes.
Okay. Let's
do it. And I, yeah, I did okay finding photos. Yeah. Okay. So, for episode 3, we start with Steed deciding to go to the Republic of Pirates. And so we start with him in one of his many beautiful dressing gowns. And one of the things about Steed is he's the gentleman pirate. He has a lot of clothes. He's a gentleman. And he likes to look really good. He likes to be clean, you know, like our idea of pirates is, of course, like dirty, grimy criminals. And he is trying to sort of go against that stereotype mm-hmm. and be a classy kind of pirate. Kinder, even. Mm-hmm. And I did find some information about this dressing gown. According to Hannah Green on Instagram, it's made of a textured rayon jacquard lined with silk. And according to Frockflix, they say it's fairly similar in cut to late 17th and early 18th century wrapping gowns, mm-hmm. which would have been probably in heavier fabric. But I think that the light fabric is nice because they're in the Caribbean, you know, like...
Mm-hmm.
It's much probably like leather. Exactly. Yeah. So I think it's, and I think that the color is an absolutely beautiful choice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have some, oh, here's another shot of it. There's him on the deck Ooh. With a couple of the crew members who I'll talk about in a bit. And then I have a picture of it on the mannequin, which I love.
Yay.
And it has, like all this like soutache work on it. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of like this cording that is going around like the, you know, like the center front.
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful detail. And I think Hannah Green said a couple of times in her Instagram post that they really didn't have a lot of time to get stuff together for this show. Mm-hmm. So when there is beautiful sort of like handwork in there, it's almost more impressive because you know that they were on a tight deadline. Yeah. So the fact that they managed to get some nice little details in there is... pretty great. Oh, and she said also that this yellow fabric is from Mood, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
We love that. We love when we can source where things came from.
It makes me happy to be like, oh, I shop there.
I know. I can people, see that somewhere in the store that I go to from, on a regular basis. Yeah,
the people from Our Flag Means Death shop there and I shop there, and that means that we are equals, and I love that. let's see. Okay, yeah. So then Steed gets dressed up to the nines to go to the Republic of Pirates, and he makes the choice to dress in all white, which is not a great choice when you are a pirate to begin with. But also, you know, like dressing in all white is he says in the show that it's a power move and that people, you know, will automatically respect him because he's dressed so well. And then, of course, Lucius, who is behind him, who kind of acts as his, like, assistant, immediately gets blood all over him. And it's played as a comedy, obviously, because this is a comedy show. Mm-hmm. And Hannah Green says about this white look, we ended up making 10 multiples of this using over 150 yards of fabric.
Ah, that sounds so... Oh my gosh. I mean, incredible. That's a lot. But also, wow.
A lot. That's a lot. Because he does so kind of, things do happen to him in this costume. Of course. That makes sense. He gets stabbed later on. And then also in this scene in the bar, stuff is like spilled and stuff. So, and he is kind of in like a fight scene. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that they had to make multiples, but like that's 10. Wild.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And she said 100 yards of soutache. So there's more like soutache work on the,
so crazy.
On all of the, you know,
yep.
details here. And, she said, I think we had about a week and a half to source, build, and trim everything out. That doesn't make any sense to me. Because, like, do you have 50 people? Yeah. Do you have 50 people doing it? Because otherwise, how do you get all that done?
That's insane. In a week and a half? Even a fast worker at that point. Yikes. Yeah. Again, for all of the all of you listeners who don't sew or who don't know what costumes does, This is incredible, even for costumers who are in this industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a level of expertise and work that we go through on a regular basis.
It's honestly like the fact that it looks so good yes. when they had so little time is a real points in their column. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Frockflix did point out that like the costumes are not super faithful to the period that it says it's set in, mm-hmm. which was obvious to me immediately yeah, from yeah. watching episode one. This is a very intentionally anachronistic show. So I'll just point that out that like, I'm very aware of that. And so were the showrunners mm-hmm. and costumers. Everybody knew that this was inspired by, and it's kind of through a modern lens. And what they wanted to do is tell like a beautiful queer comedy story. And they did it through sort of the lens of 18th century pirates, which I think is mm-hmm. awesome. So here's Lucius. he literally steps off the boat and like a person who is dying, like grabs him by the front of his coat. So that's why he has red blood handprints on his coat. And I think it's so funny. I have to imagine, I don't know, like, is the 150 yards of fabric for both of them, or is it for just Steve? Yeah. Because I want to know that.
That's nice.
And then here's another lovely picture from her Instagram of some of that.
That is beautiful.
Beautiful trim. Gorgeous trim.
Oh my gosh. No wonder. That must have taken yeah. forever. I can't believe a week and a half.
I know. I'll definitely tag her in our Instagram post so that you guys can go look at her mm-hmm. Instagram, because she has a few more fun posts about costumes that aren't in the episodes that I'm talking about. Okay. So at the Republic of Pirates, we meet these two characters, fun cameos of Fred Armisen and Leslie Jones. And Leslie plays a character named Spanish Jackie. And she like runs this sort of like seedy tavern. And Fred Armisen is like one of her many husbands, who is kind of just like her lackey. So their costumes are very much not super 18th century looking. Mm-hmm. But they said that they had a very specific inspiration for Spanish Jackie. Let me see. Hannah Green said Spanish Jackie's look was inspired by Marlena Dietrich mm-hmm. and 90s era Prince. And then also Leslie herself suggested Eddie Murphy in a movie called Vampire in Brooklyn as a yes. hair inspiration.
That is hilarious. I can totally see that.
Yeah, so that the combination of all those three things, definitely you can see it in this outfit. Mm-hmm. I love the red color. She also has this like really bitchin' wooden hand because she's missing a hand.
Oh.
It's on her right, mm-hmm. right there. It's made of wood. But yeah, very fun. Fred Armisen's is almost like this. This vest is very like contemporary mm-hmm. looking to me. It looks sort of like a, you know, like a waiter in a yeah. really fancy restaurant. It wouldn't be out of place now.
It almost looks a little 100 years. Like I think of those like 70s like powder suits as well. Like it looks like sure, the vest yeah. that would have gone with those. Like for that yeah, time period.
Definitely like waistcoats in the 1700s were definitely like they had buttons that kind of like went all the way to the top. They were usually not worn buttoned all the way mm-hmm. up, but they had very high necks that then were kind of worn open for like the puffy cravats and stuff to kind of spill mm-hmm. out of. So this is, yeah, very much not that, but that doesn't mean that it's not successful in communicating like what this character mm-hmm. is all about. Because as we like to talk about, good design and historical accuracy do not always, you know, mm-hmm. they're not mutually exclusive. It's okay to have good design with not 100% historical accuracy. Mm-hmm. I promise it's fine. People love to get so mad about it. It's okay. It's really okay for it not to be accurate.
And that gives us a lot more flexibility to work with creativity too.
Yeah. Because like you can't reference prints if you're sticking to 100% 1700 stuff. And then why wouldn't you want to reference prints? Mm-hmm. So here's a shot of Steed without his jacket. I just grabbed it because then we could see sort of the shirt and stuff that's underneath. Frockflix pointed out that his waistcoats are cut a little bit different than they would be in the 1700s. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's most likely a decision made because it just looks better to a modern eye. Yeah. And also, like, you kind of have to make the decision about what looks best on your actor. Mm-hmm. And
that time period, you know, had really long and it didn't hit in a flattering place.
Right.
For length.
Right. So you can try that. But, you know, if you get into the fitting and you're like, this looks bad, then you just have to change mm-hmm. it. Because Rhys Darby on the left is, he's the lead. He's like, you know, he's... We need to be able to look at him and see
leading man material.
What the showrunners want us to see. Yeah. Instead of like, why is he wearing such a long and droopy vest? Mm-hmm. It needs to not be distracting. I think that's what I'm kind of trying to say. So I grabbed this shot. This is not from one of the episodes that I covered, but I grabbed this so just so that we could kind of see the whole crew together. Mm-hmm. Cause there's not really any group shots in these two episodes that I'm covering. And it's just like a fun sort of example of a group that they're pretty like, I would say they're unified in how eclectic they are, like that they all look unique from each other, but they're unified in that it's all kind of grungy and dirty. And you can tell that they're all sailors. You can tell that they're pirates. Mm-hmm. But you can also kind of, when you look at them individually, see their personalities too, which is very fun. And then the one quote that I could find from Christine Wada was about Lucius, who is over here in the red jacket. He's the one who got the blood on him. And she said that his style was very 1980s. Mm-hmm. And she said, queer and cool. I'm like, that's cute. His striped shirt that he has under the red jacket is kind of like wide necked. And then he has like a little neck scarf and then a very cute little like crop jacket. And I could definitely see sort of the 1980s mm-hmm. influence on his costume. Yeah. Love it. Love it. Shout out to the Agers and Dyers because there's a lot mm-hmm. of that on this show. Okay. So this is Jim. And then the guy on the right is Oluwande. And they are some of my favorites. So Jim is a non-binary pirate who is initially... we think that maybe Jim is a woman pretending to be a man, but in reality, like, Jim is a non-binary person who is, like, assigned female at birth who is pretending to be a man. So it's a very interesting mm-hmm. thing. And they said that I saw in some of the research that there are three non-binary people on the writer's team, which I was like, that's really exciting. And then, like, obviously they wrote in a non-binary mm-hmm. character, and then Vico Ortiz, who plays the character, is also non-binary, so it's just like excellent representation and a very fun plot. But Jim starts wearing like a big fake nose and a big fake beard, and then Oluwande is like their friend, and they kind of bond, and then they have kind of like a romantic subplot that happens later. But Frockflix found out that Oluwande's little knit cap is actually based on an extant example from the 17th century. And they had a picture of it that it's like very closely inspired by one that was actually found.
I was going to say, I was like, it's like that kind of droopy, like almost teardrop hat.
Yeah. And it has this interesting like diamond pattern in it. And I think it's so cute. I also love, you can't see it right here, but can you see in this picture? I love he wears this mm-hmm. rope belt that's just like straight up rope from probably like the sails. And I think it's so cute. He's such a good character. I love this show. Anyway, this is just me gushing about how much I love everyone. So here's Jim after they are revealed to be like not like not the Jim that everyone thought they were, not a man, but a non-binary person. So then this is what they look like for the rest of the show. Just thought I'd show sort of like before and after. Yeah. Okay. So then now we're kind of moving into episode 4. I tried to do it in kind of like plot order, but it's a little bit scattered. At the end of episode 3, Steed gets stabbed. And so at the beginning of episode 4, he's kind of going in and out of like a dream because he's like,
losing blood,
ill and injured. Yeah. So it's like we flash back to what his life was before he became a pirate. Mm-hmm. And so this is his wedding. And his wife's name is Mary. She's right here in the white, obviously. This is probably where I should point out that white wedding dresses were not really a thing until Queen Victoria, but that's okay. That's okay.
We're anachronistic. It's out of time.
And to a modern audience, if we want to pick out the bride, we got to put her in white. We have to know it's a wedding, you know? So this is just a fun little example of what Steed's life was like before he became a pirate. Some fun fabrics and costumes happening here. His color palette is definitely a little bit more subdued before he abandons his life and goes to live his life at sea. So he lives, he wears sort of more like browns, earthy greens and stuff like that. And here's another shot. And he's kind of like in like a red orange that kind of goes with, as you can see, it goes with the house that he lives in with Mary. And I love this yellow gown that she has. I think it's so beautiful.
Like that ochre color. Do love a good ochre.
Yeah. And I'm a little bit sad because I was tempted to pull pictures of her from later in the season because we do revisit her later in the season and we kind of catch up and see what her life has been like since Steed left. And she's been like absolutely thriving and has become a painter and is just like loving life as a single mom. And she's wearing a completely different style of clothing when we catch back up with her. But people will just have to watch the show to see that, I guess, because I was like, I feel like if I get too many pictures from too many different episodes, it's like confusing about which episode I'm actually covering. So all that to say, I didn't end up doing that.
This is just a sneak peek for you to keep seeing the show.
That's just me trying to sell you on the show. So watch it because it's great. And this actress is so funny. She's so funny. Obviously, also Steed's costumes before he goes to sea. He wears a lot more like embroidery and like jacquard and print and metallics and just like fancier stuff once he leaves. And it's like obviously he already owned that stuff. But maybe he was kind of like not wearing it as much when he was at home because he wasn't feeling like he was his true self. Because ultimately, like, this show is about like he and Blackbeard are both like yearning and searching for something. And they kind of find it together. Like, not necessarily they do fall in love, but they also kind of like find what they actually want to be doing with their lives. So I do think that the progression of his character is shown through sort of like the costumes.
I feel like even the way he wears this jacket makes him look so much more uncomfortable here too, which I think is something.
Yeah, and his body language.
Yeah, too. I think like some of that is actor driven, but like costumes can make a huge difference with that too. Like whether or not something almost looks like it fits too snugly or too loosely can make a huge difference in how an audience perceives the character. Yeah. So that's really cool because it's very apparent, obviously, in this picture.
Yeah, and you can see his waistcoat is even shorter, like, and it's kind of, it definitely hits him at, like, an awkward place. So, like, the awkwardness is just, like, all around. It's seeped into him. You can tell he does not feel comfortable in any way in those scenes. Okay, so changing to a completely different group of people. These are members of Blackbeard's crew. So the guy in the middle is Izzy, who is his first mate. Not a good guy, treacherous, mutinous guy. And then we have Guz Khan, who I am in love with. He's on Taskmaster. On the left, I can't remember his character's name, but the guy on the right, his character's name is Fang, I think. Oh, that makes sense. He's wearing a big Fang.
Obvious.
I want to say Guz Khan's character's name is Ivan, but don't quote me on that. So the thing that I enjoyed about Blackbeard's crew is that they're very obviously not period. Mm-hmm. They are so different in tone from Steed Bonnet's crew that like it like they couldn't be more different. So like obviously they're all wearing black. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely like just like a whiff of Hot Topic in there. That's
a good way to describe that, a whiff.
Just a whiff, just a sprinkling of Hot Topic. And I will say that the one choice I disagree with is the fact that Fang has a studded belt wrapped around his head. That mm-hmm. has bothered me since I watched the show for the first time, and it continues to bother me. I think it looks really cheesy and weird. Mm-hmm. That's a choice I disagree with, and I'm not afraid to say it. otherwise, overall, I think that the crew is pretty fun. Like, I like sort of like the leaning into the stereotypical pirateness with the striped shirt mm-hmm. that Ivan has on. I think that that's always fun because that's sort of like the cartoony idea of a pirate that isn't really based in anything. But I think it's fun to kind of acknowledge it. And then, of course, Izzy is the most like, I would say he looks really dangerous and deadly because he's kind of more streamlined. He wears just like this. I think this is a leather vest.
It does look a little leather.
And this interesting sort of puff-sleeved shirt. And he doesn't have a bunch of accessories or anything because, like, he's streamlined. He's kind of deadly. He can't be trusted, you know, that kind of thing.
He doesn't need a ton of weapons to show that he's deadly.
yeah. So I think that Blackbeard's crew is definitely pretty fun. Okay, so then we meet Blackbeard. Yay, finally. This is my favorite costume, I think, on the show. That might be kind of like a basic B thing to say, a basic bitch thing to say that his costume is my favorite. But it's really cool. They did a really good job. Let me see. So David Jenkins says that Blackbeard's costume was inspired by the Road Warrior, a.k.a. Mad Max, which makes sense because you can't. I have more shots, but it makes sense because his leather jacket only has one sleeve, which is exactly what Mel Gibson wears in The Road Warrior. He wears a leather jacket with one sleeve. And then also based on a picture of Prince that came up when I Googled Prince 1978, is what he said. And I'm like,
yes,
that's so specific. So wait, I don't know where this quote, I think this is still his quote. The legendary Christine Wada took these references and very quickly arrived at Blackbeard's look. Leather at sea in the Caribbean makes no sense. At least there's a little breathing room in the midriff. So he's got like a leather jacket that has basically a pauldron on one side, which is kind of like a piece of armor that like is for protection. And then he has just like a regular black t-shirt under that, and then black leather pants that have kind of an interesting period inspiration. They have kind of like a fall front and then like buttons that go down the side. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely elements in there that are references to sort of like the period style, but it's very clearly not based in a real thing from 1717. and I think it's really effective because we don't meet him until, you know, the end of the third episode. He's kind of like this person of mystique that the other characters talk about. He's very mysterious. And we kind of only see him from the back a few times for the first time. So then his entrance in this look, it's like so effective that like it kind of blew my mind the first time I saw it, even though I knew that it was him. I knew it was coming because I had seen pictures of him online. Mm-hmm. But it was still, anyway, I'm gushing now, but I love it. it's really good. And shout out to my friend Rose, if she's listening. She made an incredible cosplay of this outfit recently. And she did her freaking research. It is like picture perfect, like so good a replication of it. And I really admire her because leather is very hard to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You cannot make mistakes with leather. Once you punch a hole in it, it's in there forever. It does not go away.
Exactly. I have a quote. Let me see. I have a quote kind of just about like what I was talking about with what Steed and Blackbeard are doing. So Bonnet becomes the object of fascination from Blackbeard and learns more about the life of a pirate, throwing himself into learning and gaining the respect and loyalty of his crew in the process. And then Blackbeard inversely learns to soften and allow himself to explore who he is outside the mantle of his pirate name and the fear that it instills in those around him. So that's kind of just like their general journeys about like how Steed like wants to be tougher and then Blackbeard wants to be softer. So then they kind of come together and teach each other how to be those things. And one of those things is that I just grabbed this because it's Steed showing Ed his closet and it's a really cute scene. and he, yeah, it shows that he made a fun sort of bookshelfy secret door in his office where it's like a big walk-in closet in the ship. And it's very fun. And I like the scene. That's the only reason why I grabbed that picture.
Yay.
And then I have two more pictures and they're just from the end. And they do this little funny gag where they decide that they're going to trade places because it's a comedy show. And that's a funny thing to do. And so they put on each other's costumes. So I just have this shot of Steed wearing Blackbeard's jacket, and then this funny shot of Blackbeard wearing some of Steed's clothes. I really like these breeches, these like rust colored mm-hmm. breeches. And that's it. Let me see if I skipped any quotes. Yep, I got all of them. Yay me!
Woo-hoo.
All right, that's it. That's my flag means death. My specific flag means death. I don't know why your flag. That's
great job, Sarah.
Thank you. Oh, such a good show. I gotta watch season two. I'm so excited to watch it.
Yay! Good job, Sarah. That was so much fun.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a fun show, and I know that the fans are all campaigning to get it picked back up for a season three. I've heard though that it doesn't end in a super unsatisfying way in season two. So I was a little bit nervous to watch it because I was like, I heard it got canceled, and I was like, should I not even watch? Like, what
if season two ends on a cliffhanger, like the middle of somewhere where you're just like, great, I'll never know what happens because it's never going to continue.
It sounds like it doesn't cliffhang, though, that's so good. I'm just, yeah, I'm totally going to watch
That's how I felt about Anne with an E.
Oh, man. Yeah, I knew a lot of people who were sad about that one.
Oh, man. But anyways, we digress.
Netflix does that a lot. Netflix canceled Shadow and Bone, and I'm still salty about it. Yeah.
No, yeah. I'm so sad about that.
And I have really strong opinions about Shadow and Bone. I think that they shouldn't have started with the actual plot of Shadow and Bone. I think they should have started with Six of Crows because it's a way more interesting story. Kaz and his crew, yeah. Like doing, because those are the books that I've read. I have not read the first duology, but I was excited that they were going to integrate Kaz and his plot line into the other one. But I still feel like it could have been better if they had just started with Kaz and his crew, because that duology, Six of Crows, is about Kaz and his crew doing heists. Mm-hmm. And it's like so much more action packed and interesting. And I feel like just like the stuff with the Dark One, which is kind of repetitive. And I feel like I've seen that story before, you know, like I feel like the Chosen One thing is done so many times before, but like a teenage criminal gang doing a heist in a magical world that I have not seen. Yeah. So like they really should have. Anyway, as you can see, I'm passionate and salty about it.
I can spend another episode on that one.
Yeah, maybe I'll cover that at some point because I did still enjoy it. And it was nice to see my favorite characters on the screen. I just wish I had gotten to see them doing.
That's one of the cool book series that is on my list. I have not read it yet, but it's been on my
I recommend
it's been on my read list. But my read list has been going very slow this year.
I feel that. I've kind of only been listening to audiobooks this year. I've like not had any
I borrowed a bunch of books at the beginning of this year and I've not even finished one, so I had to return the other two that I borrowed at the same time, and I was like, it's gonna take a little longer than I thought. And then the other two I have are audiobooks, so I'm just slowly getting through them, but we can cut most of this out of this episode.
I don't is this color that people will be interested to hear? Probably not.
It's true.
Okay, we should wrap up. What a good time.
Thanks so much for joining us.
We really hope you enjoyed this, and we hope that you also enjoy the interview that's going to be coming out soon. It was a fun one, and as always, we are very reachable on Instagram or even via email if you have requests or comments, whatever you want. Just, you know, toss them our way.
Yeah, I think we have yet to hear. Well, I should say we have yet to receive emails from listeners, but I'm always excited when I get emails from listeners or comments from listeners.
That would be nice. Just send us some love notes in our inbox.
It can be a request. It can just be a, hey, we listen to your podcast.
Yeah. I also noticed today that we have 8 whole ratings on Spotify. So thank you to those 8 people who have done that. And if you're listening on Spotify, it's really easy to rate. All you have to do is tap the little stars, and then you don't even have to do anything. That's all you have to do. So if you're listening on Spotify, please rate us. That would be great.
Thanks for those 8 people.
Yeah.
All right. Well, catch you on the next episode. That's it. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Costume Plot. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Costume Plot. If you have a question, comment, or a movie suggestion, you can email us at thecostumeplot@gmail.com.
Our theme music is by Jesse Timp, and our artwork is by Jojo Siu. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts.